And now it's time for Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. For the next 2 hours, join Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Mexa, Corey Sandin, and this week's special expert guest for fishing information, new techniques to catch more fish, and the most current scoop on what's happening in the water. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Yamaha Outboards, official motor sponsor of Let's Talk Hookup. Royal Polaris, the world's finest long-range sports fisher. By Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup, and Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best, Shimano. Get ready for the fastest 2 hours on radio with the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Mexa, and Corey Sandin.
Good morning, anglers, and welcome to Let's Talk Hookup, man. Do we have a great show for you today? Mike Shane from Hub SeaWorld Research Institute joining us. We have so much cool stuff to talk about. Always really fun having somebody from the scientific community, especially a good fishing buddy like Mike. It's going to be a really fun show. Lots of great stuff to cover, and we look forward to talking to you. You're listening to Southern California's Sport Fishing Voice. This is Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network.
You've heard all about it. You know the angler's catching fish habit, so what's holding you back? It's a fact. FishDope.com really does help you catch more fish and burn less fuel. FishDope.com is the only fish finding service with a spotter plane along with a crew of top anglers on the water almost every day that report actual locations and catches. You can get daily catch reports from Point Conception to San Martin Island 365 days a year. FishDope.com is for everyone, whether you have your own boat, fish on your friend's boat, or a sport boat. FishDope.com has online planning tools, moon phase, tides, hotbite icons, and more. So bottom line is, if you don't have FishDope.com, well, you're probably missing a lot of bites. Membership costs less than $50 of gas, and that's for the entire year. That's right, 1 year. What a bargain! Plus, use this special code to save $20 on a new FishDope.com membership. Check it out today. FishDope.com. Catch more fish, burn less fuel.
Lever drag 2-speed reel at an affordable price. It's Speedmaster 2, the extremely durable, high-performance Speedmaster 2 with high maximum drag power and a smooth, ultra-wide range of drag adjustability is an absolute fish-fighting machine. Its rigid, hoggity body prevents misalignment of moving parts under the heaviest loads. Plus, a spare drag cam is included for optimal use with monofilament lines. The Speedmaster is now available in four models, 12, 16, 20, and 25. This is the perfect reel for the angler looking for a powerful, lightweight, smooth casting reel for tuna or other powerful saltwater game fish at more affordable price. Nothing in its class can match the Shimano Speedmaster 2, built to provide high-end performance and durability in a compact, lightweight frame. Get the Shimano Speedmaster 2 lever drag reel at your local Shimano dealer. Check Shimano.com for all the details.
We all need to get around, but we all need something different from our vehicles. Your San Diego County Ford dealers have you covered if you're looking for a new truck this month. Plus, it's SUV season, so they have great deals for everyone. Whether it's a new EcoSport that is nimble and fun around town, or the Ford Explorer that is capable of putting a boat in the water and has seating for seven, Ford has you covered. Ford trucks and SUVs aren't just powerful and legendary. They have the latest technology that helps you seamlessly connect your smartphone and ensure you're safe on the road. Features like Pro Trailer Backup Assist on trucks are truly a game changer at the ramp, helping you back up a trailer by simply turning a knob on the dash and doing the hard work for you. So check out all the great deals during SUV season and save some money on the right gear for you. Learn more at buyfordnow.com or visit your San Diego County Ford dealers today. They'll be glad to hook you up.
All right, good morning, and welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Rick, I'm stoked to be in here with you.
Yeah, me too, buddy. Going to be a lot of fun. We got Pete out of the studio for this weekend. He's down in the Florida Keys doing a little field research.
You know, it's funny you mention that. The fish actually bit this last week, like the big ones.
Oh, man.
And, hey, send Pete out of town, and the cows start biting.
This was one of the funnest weeks of working down at Fisherman's Landing at the tackle store there that we have ever had. Every single day, it felt like there were multiple fish over 300 pounds coming into land. I've never seen this volume of tuna this big ever before. You know, in the 50-year history of the business and the 20-some-odd years that I've been down there, a 300 pounder is a huge deal. You know, I mean, even in the height of long range fishing, every boat, great fishing. I mean, at best, there's a couple to a few a year. At the very best, you know, in some years you don't get any, and some years maybe ones and twos. And to see day and a half and 2 day boats coming in with multiples, the American Angler had four fish over 300 pounds.
How far away are we from a 400 pounder?
One got caught.
Oh,
it happened. There was a yacht that weighed one on the Avalon Pier that was 412 pounds.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's been so much fun.
Insanity.
It really has been. And yeah, you said the best they're biting. And what's so cool about it, too, is it's not just feast or famine with those giant ones. There is some fantastic middle to be, it's like all, we've said it a few times when Tom Green's been on the show, but like all age classes seem to be available. There's great fishing, both drift and anchor fishing, on regular, what, you know, the Southern California sport boat fleet cut their teeth on, like 30 to 50 pounders. There's great fishing for those. Then there's also a lot of like 100 to say 150 pounders.
Nothing to shake a stick at.
And
right?
Then there's a few of these giants. So lots of boats have had really good success, you know, on catching, you know, great scores and even limit scores on big school-sized bluefins, and then, you know, saving the last few bullets and going out and trophy hunting and catching a couple. It's been awesome. Yeah, really, really fun. Really fun. And speaking of really fun, we've got a really fun buddy in the studio today, and that's Mike Shane from Hub SeaWorld Research Institute. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hey, we're stoked to have you,
great
buddy.
Thank you for the opportunity to, you know, educate your listeners and talk about our programs.
Well, we're really excited to have you, and it's been a little bit since we've got to chat with you, and always so much going on. You guys do so much behind the scenes that obviously us, you know, on the outside don't know about, but the biggest thing that you're so known for, at least with us and our anglers, is the sea bass program, and still going strong?
Yes, you know, there's obviously, it's been an interesting year, as it's been for all of us, and a lot of changes have also happened this year, and you know, we've managed to navigate our way through the, obviously, the pandemic, et cetera, you know, this whole year. I mean, the way it started back in March, or when it started back in March, we had over 80,000 fish in production moving through our hatchery. And so, you know, as when that hit and everything was locked down in the middle of March there was a lot of questions, and can we even go in to take care of our fish, and what,
sure,
what are we doing? And, you know, everyone was sort of trying to figure out how we're going to manage this. And so we eventually have to, you know, as we've gone through this process, implement plans, how to keep our staff safe, spacing, mask wearing, et cetera. So we then worked out a plan. We actually had to tag those fish. So we managed over the next couple of weeks to get those fish tagged out to the raceways. So they moved from inside the hatchery to outside the hatchery. And that's sort of their first exposure to Mother Nature's seawater, just basically get some basic sand filtration. So we're holding them there, making plans for deliveries, and then Mother Nature decides to add her own pandemic.
Yeah, throw a second curveball at you.
Yeah, with the red tide. So now we're, you know, we got all our fish out there outside, and the water in the raceways is black from the red tide. You know, the sand filters are working overtime. They're backwashing frequently. You could see the oxygen was dropping down there, so we would, you know, we added more air stones. We kept our fish, you know, alive and healthy. But, you know, after a week of not seeing our fish and not knowing how long this red tide was going to last, because it was unprecedented. I mean, we've never seen this many cells per volume.
Oh, really?
In previous years.
Okay.
Yeah, I forget the actual numbers. And we're talking, you know, 9 million or millions, you know, per, you know, mill of seawater.
Wow.
But it's just crazy. And so, you know, we then, not knowing what was going on, and we requested emergency release permission from the department. And so they gave us that permission. And in the lagoon, what was going on?
Emergency release of the fish.
Yes. Yeah, so
okay.
So we were able to release them. And so we put a plan in place. And what we were seeing with the ebb and flood of the tides in the lagoon was that at low tide, all this water from the back part of the bay was coming out, and the water was anoxic. And that's when all the wild fish were floating up. You'd see invertebrates trying to climb out of the water. And we even saw lobsters molting. I think the stress of all that.
Wow.
So But at high tide, the waters were super saturated with oxygen. A high tide was right at dusk. So we know from previous studies that our fish like to leave the lagoon at night on an outgoing tide.
Okay.
So we released, over our next successive nights, a few thousand each night, 5,000 to 7,000.
Awesome.
And so the fish, hopefully I went out the next morning. Next day I'd go out there looking around the lagoon, especially at low tide, looking for any of our fish and floating up. And I didn't see any of our fish there. I certainly saw a lot of wild fish, that were succumbed to the anoxic waters, but
low tide.
Yeah, didn't see any of ours, so we just continued to release our fish
over
a couple of days. So, here we managed it again. I know others weren't as fortunate with that were locally that were holding fish, and there were certainly pretty problems for them as well. But we've been doing this for 30 years, and we're always prepared, and we've got oxygen and air and all kinds of stuff to throw in the water, so to keep them going. And we didn't lose a single fish, so that was
great. What a cool story. I you forget about things like that. We were BS when the red tide happened. It was in the middle of a pandemic and none of us were really fishing, and it was something that you went down to the beach and you saw the green waves at nighttime, and you don't think about that from the outside. What a major issue that is. I mean, the entire hatchery is pulling water from right there.
Yeah, so again,
that's great job. That's
got
cool.
Through it, and we're
good team effort.
Moving forward. Yeah, so thank you.
That's awesome. And still continuing right now. I mean, obviously we're past that, and you got all those fish released. And how early in the stages were those released in comparison to where if the red tide hadn't existed, how long would you have held on to those guys? Like, what's an average time that the fish are in your
Those
in your
fish
care?
Were a little bit larger. They were probably around 4, 5, 6 inches. I mean, typically we try to release them around 8 to 10 inches.
Okay.
So, they were destined to go to grow outs to grow through the spring months and release before summer. So they had a couple more months to go. But again, they're a little bit better than, releasing
right
a
ball.
1 inch, so that was good.
That's great.
Got them out there. So it wouldn't have been much longer. Although some of them we were planning to do some longer term research and hold them and grow them to a little bit larger size, possibly even getting some over to Catalina was part of the plan. And that's kind of been interesting, kind of manage our way, because Catalina has been shown, at least for our program, potentially have a good impact for the fishery with regards to the fish that we've released over there.
Okay.
Their survivorship, et cetera, seems to be something unusual going on over there, where we seem to have a high survivorship of fish that we release over there, at least those that recruit to the fishery. Yeah.
And you're still tagging every single one?
Yeah,
every
still,
single, like you were talking about that you had 80,000 fish in your care at the time. Every one of those has got a chip in it.
Yeah, so we tag every one of those, and we've got tagging stations, so it's a multi-week process.
Oh,
sure. Tagging about 5,000 fish, a day. I was just tagging yesterday, and the last couple of days we started tagging the next batch of fish that, we started another production run here in July.
Great.
So fish will be, loading up all the volunteer grow out sites that are run by the Coastal Conservation Association of California, CCA. And so they'll be getting fish here in November and December, be loaded up for the holidays. That's their Christmas present too. Overwinter their fish,
yeah.
And hopefully release them next spring.
Yeah, that's
how long
cool.
does it actually take to rear them to where you're letting them go?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, so the process works is, at the hatchery, they spend about the first 3 months going through different systems from egg to larvae to juvenile, and going through different diets that we try to wean them over to, eventually from live feeds over to pelleted feed. And then once they're on pelleted feed, the pellets just get larger as the fish grow larger. And so hopefully by the time we get them out the door at somewhere between 3 and 4 months, they're onto a pellet size that we provide the grow out sites with, multiple bags of feed that they can then take care of their fish for the few months that they hold them onto. So they'll hold them again for another 4, 5, 6 months, and then release them once they get to that 8 to 10 inch size. And then the white sea bass during its first year of life, at least from our hatchery operations or culture operations, grows about 1 inch a month. So
okay.
A year-old sea bass is about 12 inches or so. And
so their growth rate at that size is pretty exponential.
It's and then they start slowing down as they obviously get older in life. The next year, I think a two-year-old fish can be anywhere between 18 to 20 inches, and 3 years.
They start slowing down, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. And then by the time they reach 5 years, females actually, we've done some age and growth studies and can see that, at about 5 years in age, that the fish tend to distinguish between males and females in their growth patterns. Okay. So males, as they become mature, sexually mature at earlier ages, their growth curve starts to flatten and slow down. Females continue to grow. They're sexually mature a little bit later. And so, you know, for all fish, that's usually typically what happens when they become sexually mature. Their growth rate slows down. But the big sea bass or the females continue to grow. And you know, usually when you talk about catching a lunker sea bass, 60, 80 pounds, I mean, those are most likely females. I think the largest male we've all ever have seen has only been about 15 years old.
Okay.
And that was, I forget what the weight on that was, but the oldest female was around 24 years in age.
Really?
That was the one that was speared by Bill Ernst.
Okay.
And, you know, that was the record at 93-plus pounds.
Oh, my Lord.
And that was, a female that was only 24, somewhere, I can't remember, 24 to 26 years in age. So, you know, in the world of fish, the white sea bass are really considered a fast-growing,
right,
short-lived species.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought. 24 years old, 90 pounds.
Yeah, my gosh.
Like you said, that's a great point that, you know, the mystique of a sea bass is it's this super old fish and they're 50 years old, you know, when they're that size, but not necessarily the case.
Yeah, they probably don't live to make to 50 years old, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I hear people saying all the time, and this is something that's, I appreciate the opportunity to come here and educate your listeners, is, oh, this is a 50-pound sea bass. This is way too old or big that for your program. Well, 50-pound sea bass is only about 10 years old. So, I mean, our program has been operating for almost 30 years, at least the culture side, for 30 years, since the early 80s. And, you know, there's no sea bass out there that has, you know,
and
not a program.
You're saying that in terms of, you know, it's still, to this day, right this second, so important to turn in the heads for the research purpose of it. And you're saying that that's a thing that guys have said, oh, this fish is way too big. The head wouldn't matter for you guys because it couldn't be one of your fish. It's way too old.
Correct.
Not the case.
Yeah, no, not the case. I mean, I hear that and have heard that numerous times. So hopefully everyone can spread the word that, you know, all your heads, you know, can should be coming in and saving, and we can scan it and check it for a tag. The next world record, who knows?
Yeah.
Could be a hatchery fish.
I'm such a huge fan of the project and what you guys do. I'm a huge fan. And I hear criticism. I'm sure, you know, this is your world, so I know that you hear it. But people will say that, oh, that, you know, the number of tags that come back are so few and far between. I can't tell you the number of fish that get caught, and obviously the heads are never turned in, so we never get that data. And then the thing that the naysayers talk about is that there's no account for the amount of fish that you put in the water that then reproduce with other fish. It'll never have a tag that we're lucky enough to catch someday. Like, there's nothing but good as far as I'm concerned with what's going on. I just think it's a great program, and I'm so happy that it's still going as well as it is.
Thank you. And that, you know, that's correct in those statements. And just to add further insight into that is that, you know, a few years ago, we had independent scientists from around the country review this program. And again, while we know that contribution was low according to what the data they analyzed, you know, they showed and discussed that with as little as releasing 100,000 fish, that we could have a huge impact on the fishery if we just get them over some humps and get them to a little bit larger size. So in Catalina, that's where kind of Catalina comes into play, where we've had some great success. So we have created a 5-year science plan, sort of a roadmap, to help us, you know, move forward in this new day and age. And part of what happened here recently, just to educate everyone, is we had the and thanks to the CCA for changing the state legislation for the ORHAP. So Assembly Bill 1949 was just signed off by the governor about a month ago, and basically it changes the ORHAP, or updates, I should say, the ORHAP legislation. There were some, the way the old legislation was written back in the early 80s, et cetera, had some names of different organizations that are on the ORHAP panel, for example, that no longer exist. So they just made sure that it was updated, as well as created a separate scientific advisory committee as part of this. So now the department is trying to fulfill those obligations under 1949 to get people in place early next year, so we can start to then have meetings, evaluate, and continue to move the program forward following, you know, our science, the five-year science plan, or, you know, working with the science advisory committee to see where, you know, how best to move this program forward.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
this is great, right?
Yeah, I like it a lot. And such good education and information ahead of us. And I can't wait to learn more.
Yeah,
I
mean,
no, knowing a 10-year-old fish is 50 pounds. Are you kidding me? It's good stuff for sure. Hey, we've got a full 2 hours ahead of us here on Let's Talk Hookup with Mike and all this information from Hub SeaWorld. And if you want to join us, 833-288-0973. We're giving away a full-day trip on the San Diego out of Seaforth. Can't beat that. That's a good trip to be on right now, huh, Rick?
Yeah, no doubt about
sure.
that.
And we have the texting option, too, if you haven't heard of that. Yeah, just join us on the download the app, and you can send us a text. Please make sure to leave your name with your question or comment you have for Mike. So you could do it that way on the app with the texting option or calling us at 833-288-0973. We're going to be right back on Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network.
If you're into saltwater fishing, listen to this. Saturday, November 7th, it's Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. Hi, this is Doug Kern. We are pulling out all the stops on this one with discounts from 20 to 60% off on hundreds of items. Over 20 manufacturers' reps like Shimano and PowerPro. Plenty of seminars by saltwater experts, a giant raffle, and most of all, incredible deals on tackle. Check out all the Shimano and PowerPro product we have and talk to the Shimano and PowerPro guys about the best Shimano rod and reel for your trip. Backed by popular demand, the Shimano Tranks Casting Contest. Cast the Shimano Tranks 500 and the Terramar 90H rod and show your surface iron casting skills. The winner gets a Tranks 500 worth $500. It's our biggest sale of the year with hundreds of items discounted up to 60%. Plus, plenty of manufacturers' incentives from Shimano and PowerPro to spice up the pot. There will also be a huge raffle and lots of fun for everyone. So don't miss it. Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing. Unbelievable pricing on tackle clothing and accessories. Saturday, November 7th. Check saltwatertackle.com.
One of the dream trips for most anglers is Alaska. There are so many lodges. How do you make a choice? It's easy. Choose the one most Let's Talk Hookup listeners return to time after time. Kingfisher Charters in Sitka, Alaska. No one does it better than Kingfisher Charters. They offer the best service, the most comfortable accommodations, fantastic food, and the finest charter captains in Sitka. All for the ultimate value. One visit and you will understand why nobody beats Kingfisher Charters. Sitka is famous for some of the best runs of salmon in Alaska. And if giant Alaskan halibut is your target, the expert captains at Kingfisher Charters know the hot spots and can put you on a fish of a lifetime. Plenty of rockfish and huge ling cod are there too. And when it comes to fish processing, the best in Alaska is Kingfisher Charters. It's all included in your package. In fact, everything is included except tips. It is truly amazing how the Kingfisher crew continues the quality of service they deliver year after year. Kingfisher Charters, 800-727-6136 or check kingfishercharters.com.
Fillet knives shouldn't be disposable. Introducing Aptco fillet knives that are built to last. Designed in collaboration with Boker Germany, Aptco knives feature 4116 German stainless steel bonded with titanium nitride to ensure optimum corrosion resistance and exceptional edge retention. A non-slip TPR handle maintains a firm grip when processing game fish. Premium in every sense, Aptco fillet knives are available in multiple length options to provide the right tool that gets the job done season after season. Fillet knives from Aptco. Any fish, any water.
There are plenty of boat slips and marinas in San Diego, but there is only one Kona Kai. It's not just a place to park your boat. It's a way of life here in America's finest city. Come check out what's new at the Kona Kai. 170 luxury guest rooms, including 41 brand new suites, featuring contemporary island-inspired decor, deep soaking tubs, and oversized balconies. The Kona Kai Resort Spa and Marina has multiple swimming pools and a private beach, waterfront restaurants, and an award-winning spa, most of which is included for
marina tenants. Add the Kona Kai Club to your membership and you have access to the new Paloma Pool Bar, a new and exclusive pool area for adults only, which allows guests to enjoy poolside craft cocktails and California coastal cuisine while overlooking your boat. In addition to all this, Kona Kai is the closest marina to the open ocean. Check resortkonakai.com on the web for more information, to reserve a slip, or inquire about joining the club. The Kona Kai Resort, much more than just a place to park your boat. Fifth Avenue Insurance has a new name. It's Snap Insurance, still providing anglers and boaters with the best in boat insurance and the lowest rates. The experts at Snap Insurance will make sure your boat and property are covered right. Traveling to Mexico? Snap has you covered. You can even work with your agent to wrap your home and auto with your boat policy to save even more. Call them for advice on your current boat policy or any of your insurance needs. Snap Insurance, 800-527-6617 or Snap INS. .com. That's SNAPPINS.com.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Again, if you want to give us a shout, 833-288-0973. We're giving away a full-day trip on the San Diego out of Seaforth.
And sweeten up that pot a little bit. In addition to that, you're also going to get the new calendar. It's coming out. The 2021 CCA Bill Varnay calendar is going to be coming out with all the killer tide charts, all the pertinent big, you know, important fishing dates, and, you know, Fred Halsh, all that kind of stuff is always in there. So
probably available in the shop soon, huh?
I don't think we've got ours yet, but, I mean, obviously they're out.
And
so, yeah.
Coming up in November.
I saw some of the photos. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. And, yeah, we'll definitely have ours when they roll out. That's always fun.
I love my mind. I love having it every year.
It's my favorite tide chart. You know, if nothing else, it's cool photos and it's the best tide chart around. So, yeah, I'm stoked on it. And, yeah, in addition to that trip on the San Diego, somebody's going to get one of those brand-new calendars. Again, if you want to get through, 833-288-0973. Or like Corey says, shoot us a text. That's been a really fun option to the show. Lots of fun text messages come through, and that's all available through the Let's Talk Hookup app.
And in fact, we did have a text from our good friend Jeff Mariani from Sagos Kayak Fishing. Had a question for Mike. Was wondering, how many of those released fish do you think find their way to Cedros, Baja California?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
I mean, it's tough to tell, right? But
yeah, I mean, we've gotten fish back. Tag recaptures, you know, 15, 20 years later. We obviously know where they were released and we know where they were caught, but we don't know or understand where they go in those 10, 20-year time frames. I mean,
sure.
They could go down to Cedros a dozen, two times and come back up, and they're just caught in the U.S. waters here. So, you know, I can't really answer that. We don't really know how much of them make it down
and,
there.
Sorry, Rick, but it's amazing in the last 5 years with the, you know, quote-unquote El Nino waters that, I mean, they've been catching sea bass up Northern California, above Frisco.
Yes, we were up there, and actually last year I had a bunch of heads brought down from the fishermen fishing in San Francisco Bay from Berkeley Marina, and so none of those were tagged, but the fact is they're catching legal-sized fish in San Francisco Bay, working with the department to also up north of there, Bodega Bay, et cetera. They were catching sea bass up there. It's kind of a remote area, but trying to get them to save heads or scan them, at least wand them. Fortunately, this program is focused here in Southern California, and that's where the fishermen pay their license to fish in the ocean. That helps to come fund this program. They don't have that fee north of Point Conception.
And that's the ocean enhancement scheme.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's so cool.
That's really cool.
So how far north? I'm sorry, Rick.
No, I love it. I love this stuff.
I have so many questions.
Yeah.
But they're northern range and they're southern range.
Yeah. So historically, we've seen white sea bass have been recorded as far north as southeast Alaska.
Wow.
Come on.
Near Juneau, yeah.
Really?
So I think in, I want to say the 1950s. I don't remember when that was up there. Maybe even earlier than that. So, but they're pretty much, you know, south of San Francisco Bay and south down to Magdalena Bay. There's thought to be an isolated population in the upper Gulf of California there, Sea of Cortez. So, yeah, they range. But, again, you look at the fishing and look at the landings. I mean, yes, they seem to be catching more, usually at this time of year in the fall, up north as water's warm. And we feel these fish move around. And that's one thing we don't really understand is their movement patterns. But typically we start to see that the guys off Santa Cruz in these areas along the coast start catching sea bass heads. And I've been up there in the past as well to check heads that they've been able to save. So just kind of trying to keep my finger on the pulse and, and what's going on, where sea bass being landed, trying to reach out to people, trying to get them to save their heads so we can check them for tags.
And it almost seems that the Monterey Bay is kind of a traditional, even outside of the El Nino-ish type of year, that you'll still get them in the Monterey Bay area.
Yes, I mean, I know there's a commercial fishery for them there, and if you even go back and read some of the old fish and game papers or publications from the, you know, the 20s and 30s, you know, the gill net fishermen were up there fishing, and they tended to set their nets differently during the times of year, like in the spring and summer, they would set them kind of perpendicular to shore, and then late fall and winter, they'd put them parallel to the shore, thinking that fish were moving offshore, they would catch them moving offshore, and, you know, just not sure if they stay in those areas, or they maybe make
cool
some
cool information.
They may make a large, you know, who knows, circular migration pattern. It's certainly seen for a similar species that occurs off South Africa, where they move around and have these large, you know, migrations in close to shore, out pelagic, you know, coming back in, and they move around. So it could be the sea bass are exhibiting the same sorts of trends and patterns here.
That always trips me out on the rare occasion that you either hear of or see a photo of a fish on an offshore bank, you know, like whether it be the, you know, the Cortez or the, or, you know, or the 9 Mile Bay or whatever it is, some offshore bank that you certainly wouldn't associate a nearshore species like you would a sea bass, and hey, this guy caught one, or here there's a sea lion eating a sea bass on the nine. Like,
yeah, well, guess what? We've caught our tagged fish out at the Cortez and I forget what's the other, Tanner Banks out there from fish released along the coastline here. So, you know, some 5 or 7 years old, a Santa Barbara fish was caught out there, a Newport Bay, a fish released from Newport Bay was caught out there. So, I mean, these guys move around, and, you know, as we say, fish have tails and they use them.
Well, I know we've got a ton of callers, so I'm going to reserve some of my questions, but I got a bunch for you, just like Corey, man. This is going to be a really fun show. But again, if you want to get through, the only line open right now, 833-288-0973. Corey, let's jump into the phones.
Let's do it, Rick. Let's talk to Don. Don from Woodland Hills. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup, Don.
Hey, good morning, Corey, Rick, Mike. Really excited to hear about today's show, especially just the last couple of minutes. Mike, I was part of a email stream last year regarding those fish up in Monterey. So, and you were part of that stream, and I really thank you for taking the lead on that. And it was exciting to hear that you did get some heads. Unfortunately, we didn't get any tagged. But I think the program is really important. I sat in some of the OREP meetings with DFW and a lot of the people that are passionate about the tagging program. And I just hope fishermen that are listening today will really continue to support that by turning in their heads, because I know you guys put in just, you know, tens of thousands of hours over the last years to make this program successful, and we just need to keep it going. So thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thank you, Dan. And as I mentioned earlier, the funding for this program comes from the ORHAP stamp, or the Ocean Enhancement Stamp, when you go to fish in Southern California. So the department gets those funds and manages them. We're actually and have been the sole contractor to the department for the operation of this program. But the way I look at it, and the way I try to encourage our staff to look at this, is that you guys are our bosses. I mean, you're providing the funding for this. We're beholden to you and the support that you're providing. And so, you know, we're trying to always look to give you guys the most bang for your buck in how we grow our fish and how we release our fish.
If somebody does go out and catch a sea bass and wants to save that head, I mean, they could throw it in their freezer until next week when they're coming. What, Fisherman's Landing, Dana Landing? What are the?
Yeah, great call. Totally.
Yeah. So there's a list of drop off locations. We have freezers up and down the coast at most of the sport fishing landings, with the exception of San Diego, because we're based here. So you can come to our Mission Bay facility or our facility in Carlsbad and drop the head in the freezer off there. I think Dana Landing does have a freezer there if we're closed on the weekend, so at least they can drop it, and then we'll go walk across the street and get them from over there. So if you go to our website at hswri.org, you can find the list. It's on various websites as well, too, of the drop-off locations. So you just get ahead in there, label it with your name, date, location. You know, obviously you can keep it quite, you know, secret. You can say, yeah, I caught it at Catalina Island. I mean, it's a large island, but if you want to put West Cove on there, that's fine, or East End, or however, you know, that's helpful. But
just a general region.
Yeah. Hopefully a little closer than a region, but yeah, you know, Point Loma versus
right.
La Jolla,
sure.
Or you know, so and then we can, you know, if you want information or what, you know, want your otoliths back, if you know, we've asked to keep those intact in the head, which are the ear bones, and that's how we age. You heard me talking about the aging and the growth of these fish. I mean, that's how we determine the age on the sea bass. So you can take those ear bones, and this is again educating your listenership. Those ear bones lay down calcareous layers on them, and so you can take those bones, you can section them, basically cut them in half, and count rings like you would on a tree. And so that's how you can age the sea bass. And so, you know, if we get a tagged fish back, we want to make sure, especially if it's an older fish, to continue to understand and look at the rings and make sure that we, what we call validate what we see in wild fish by using our tagged hatchery fish, what we know the age of. Mm-hmm. So we get a 20-year-old fish back. Do we count rings? Do we see 20 rings? Do we see 40 rings? You know, what's going on? And typically what we see, or what we have seen, is rings correlate with the age. So we see two pairs of rings each year.
Right in line.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Really neat.
Right on. Don, thanks a lot for your phone call very much. That's a great one. Let's jump right back into it, Corey.
Let's do it, Rick. Rich and Bradley, thanks for joining us on Let's Talk Hookup, Rich. Good morning.
Hey, Rich.
Yeah, good morning. The white sea bass is really a special fish, so this program is just awesome. So glad to hear about it. And I'm wondering, do you have any collection points that are up around my neck of the woods? I'm usually fishing out of Avila or from Moro Bay. And I got one other follow-up question is, what have you learned from this extensive program that you put so much time into that we could apply as hook and line anglers?
God, great questions.
So, first question, no, we don't have any drop-off points up in Avila Bay and in Moro Bay area, although I have worked with a local restaurant market / commercial fisherman that brings in sea bass, and so years ago we got a lot of heads brought down from up there, but we haven't continued that relationship, and you know, kind of the catches up there seem to wax and wane, but there's certainly been interest in that area, even interest to do grow out up in that area. Fortunately, the water's a little too cool, especially for the younger fish. But the second question was, what have we learned? Yes, I mean, we've learned quite a bit. I mean, as far as the culture side, I mean, we've obviously learned how to grow these fish, and it's a constantly learning process. What have we learned that you could apply? I mean, we know that these organisms croak. They're in the croaker family. The males are the ones that create this croaking, and so there's thought if you could go out there and hear this croaking, that possibly you could key in on where the fish are. I mean, I know the spear fishermen talk about it religiously over the years that I've worked with them with regards to they can go down there, they can hear them, they know where they're around. They even try to replicate sort of that. but, you know, we know that those croaking sounds help to synchronize and coordinate spawning events.
Okay.
So usually there's person that worked, a former employee that worked with us, did his master's work over at Catalina Island studying those croaking sounds of the broodstock that we had in captivity there. So he had identify, I think, 7 different croaking patterns and can basically tell the lead up to a spawn event that usually happens around dusk.
Really?
And that's a strategy that these pelagic spawners do to help increase the survivorship of their eggs by broadcasting their spawns at night where the predators can't see them, and hopefully give the chance eggs to disperse and hopefully increase their survivorship.
What crazy
this is
information.
So cool, man.
Yeah.
This is so cool.
So the croaking is something maybe that only happens during the spawning season, or is that, do you think they do it all year?
No, we think, I mean, again, given what we see in our broodstock tanks, we only hear that croaking when they're spawning in the tanks or in the spawning cycle.
Crazy.
Because we can alternate that. What was I going to say about that?
I mean, that's crazy information. So that's just like a February to June kind of thing?
Well, no, they have actually, this is as I was going, they have a protracted spawning season. If you look at multiple publications, I mean, we think the height of the spawning actually occurs in June and July, but we've seen them spawn as early as, I think, February or March all the way out to November. So we know that the females are multiple spawners. They don't just spawn once and they're done. They can spawn, working with our geneticist, even in our tanks, every 3 to 5 days, I think a female's ready to go again and spawn. So, you know, which makes sense. They can move along the coastline. You hear the old adage, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Like literally.
So, yeah, so they can spawn off Point Loma, continue swimming up the coast, spawn over Catalina, continue moving up the coast, spawn off of Santa Barbara, go up to Monterey and spawn. So
it's not a complete release of all their eggs in one...
Yeah, no, so they have multiple stages of eggs developing in their ovaries inside the female. So they'll release their ones that are hydrated, ready to go. Meanwhile, they've got primary oocytes or younger eggs developing within there. And they basically, the young eggs start on the walls of the what we call the lumen of the ovary. And as they mature, they sort of move out towards the middle of the ovary. And that's when they get released. Yeah,
I gotcha.
So there's different stages of eggs always in the ovaries of
that's
the
fish.
That's crazy
information.
So cool. Yeah.
And it seems so weird. I mean, calicos is my passion in life, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like they're either pregnant. I mean, they're either holding or they're not. It seems like they tend to release them all in one cycle, kind
of. Yeah, I haven't studied that species of fish. Another thing that's interesting is that they can actually change sex. They're considered, I think...
calicos?
Yeah.
Really?
So they can have both sexes.
Like,
so,
a sheephead.
Yeah, like a sheephead is... We know that they're hermaphroditic, where they can change based on... they're all born females, and then when they don't encounter enough of males, the ratio of encounters, the dominant female will then convert over to a male.
You're leaving my head spinning. We're not talking about sheephead. We're talking about calico bats.
Yeah. So wow. I don't know the whole... They can actually go either way. I don't know if they have that same... They don't really have that same relationship like a sheephead does, where they're all born one sex and they change. I think they can go back and move back. Forth. I don't know if they go, like, once they convert, like, for example, a sheephead converts to a male, they can't go back and say, I want to be a female. They're there. They're permanently there.
I got you. Yeah. Crazy.
That's wild.
Right?
Yeah. So cool.
Speechless.
Yeah, man, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Man, we got a lot more information coming up, some crazy stuff as you're hearing here, and you want to give us a shout. We do have a line open at 833-288-0973, and that's your chance to win a trip on the San Diego out of C4 Sport Fishing, and... Thanks to Bill Varney, a 2021 calendar, and can't wait to get that my hands on that one too, Rick.
Just can't wait for 2020 to be over, man.
Right, I know. I hear you there.
In fact, there's a calendar coming, means there might be an end to this one.
Exactly. Hey, we're gonna be right back on Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network.
All of us at the American Angler family want to express appreciation to our regular passengers that fish with us year after year and to the new anglers that came out this last season. We realize how precious your vacation time is, and we are truly grateful that you have chosen to spend this time with us. It's important that your experience is memorable, from the moment you call the office to the time you step off the boat. Hi, I'm Lori. Call me at the office, 619-223-5414, or check us out at AmericanAnglerSportFishing.com. Come fishing with the American Angler family and make a memory.
Here's John Ireland for Rancho Leonero.
You know, the ranch is unique. It's one of the few places in the world where you can still drive ATVs up the beach. We have fishing from the beach. We have dive trips that we run to Pomo in a number of different spots. Kayaking, of course, has been real big. We were one of the first hotels to introduce kayaking. The ranch is small, you know, it's intimate, it's 34 rooms, so everyone gets to know everyone. The old saying, where everyone knows your name, well, truly at Rancho Leonero, the employees do know pretty darn near all our guests' names. And what's even more interesting is most of the guests know each other's names. Very personal, very intimate, and a special, special environment. 2 miles of beachfront, mile on either side of the hotel. Rancho Leonero is really the last of the old-style Baja fishing resorts. 1-800-646-2252. 1-800-646-BAHA. And RanchoLeonero.com. I'll personally guarantee your best fishing experience and vacation at Rancho Leonero.
Dana Lanning in Mission Bay is truly the one-stop shop for a great day on the water. This is Chelsea. Come see me and our expert fishing staff for just about anything you need for a great day of on-the-water fun. Looking for a fishing charter? Dana Lanning has you covered with the Blackjack, perfect for up to four anglers, or the Impulse with up to six. Dana Lanning has a huge selection with everything you need to catch small bay bass or giant tuna. We will be sure to set you up with the right gear. We even offer reel repair and Mexican and California fishing licenses. Don't forget the amazing deli at Dana Lanning with all the food, ice, and beverages you need to complete your day. Need freshwater tackle? Head to East County Bait and Tackle with all the finest rods and reels, the hottest freshwater lures, and live bait. ECBT has an amazing staff who love to share their passion for fishing. East County Bait and Tackle is located at the end of the 67 freeway on Main Street in Lakeside, and Dana Lanning is next to the Dana Launch Ramp on San Diego's Mission Bay. Check out danalanning.com for more details.
Hey, it's time for the 30-second Power Pro Seminar. Here's the hot tip for those of us that like to fish with small reels for big fish. Fill your spools with Power Pro Max Quattro. It's 25% thinner than standard Power Pro. That means you're going to get more line on that small reel. Plus, you can fly line your bait more effectively. Here's another tip about Power Pro Max Quattro. Your casting distance will increase in addition to increasing your spool capacity. So downsize your tackle and use Power Pro Max Quattro. Check powerpro.com for more information.
Get ready for the largest outdoor sale in our history. Saturday, November 7th, it's Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. Hi, this is Doug Kern, and we will have great savings from Daiwa on Lexa, Saltist, and Saltiga reels. A fantastic offer on the Proteus Wind Grip Rod, too. Over 20 manufacturers' reps, including Daiwa, plenty of seminars by saltwater experts, huge raffle, and most of all, incredible deals on tackle. Up to 60% off. Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing, Saturday, November 7th. Check saltwatertackle.com.
Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup and having a fun time with Mike. And hey, Hub SeaWorld, man, we're learning all kinds of stuff here.
Yeah.
And totally digging it. You want to give us a shout? We do have one line open at 833-288-0973. Or you can text the show via the app if you haven't done so yet. Just super easy. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Download the app. And there's a button there. It's text the show. And you can send us a question, comment, whatever you want. Just make sure you leave your name.
Totally. This is usually when we're hearing from the cast man, but he's out in Venice, Louisiana right now doing a little bit of fishing. So hopefully we'll next week when we talk to cast, not only will we get our Baja report, but we'll also get a little Venice redfish and hopefully an offshore elephant and all kinds of great stuff. But that report that he normally gives us is sponsored by our good friends over at Terrafin, terrafin.com. There is just not a better source for knowing your ocean temperature than Terrafin. They do such a good job. It is commonplace on every single sport boat that leaves the dock every night. You know, I mean, those guys are always in the office printing out a new Terrafin water chart. And
the latest.
Yeah, and we're so stoked to have them. Not only is it just temperature, but it's temperature, it's chlorophyll and more. And with Terrafin Mobile, you can download your charts and take them with you on your mobile device. Terrafin is a professional's choice for accurate information, and always check terrafin.com for the latest charts multiple times. You know, they'll do them 2-3 times a day even, and you know, getting around clouds, that kind of stuff. It's just a great site.
Pretty cool, Rick.
No doubt about it. Well, the phones are packed up. Everybody's excited to talk to Mike. Let's just jump right back into him.
Let's talk to Mike. Mike calling from Rosemead. Hey, good morning, Mike. Welcome to Let's Talk Cook if I can untie my tongue. Good morning.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, that happens to me all the time, too, so hopefully I won't do it right now. But, hey, good morning to everyone down there in San Diego. And my question for you, Mike, is how long do you keep the big brooders or the mamas and papas in the production line? And when you do replace them, do you try and get fish from different areas so they're not just collected in one spot, like the males and females? That's my two questions, over.
All right. Yeah, those are good questions. The brood stock in our tanks actually have remained with us for a number of years, and we have a genetics management plan in place to move fish from tank to tank, especially the males. You know, I think it's like four or five fish, every year, move them around. And so we're trying to fully implement that. The challenge has been with funding, et cetera. So, but no, these fish will last and be in our tanks. I mean, 10, 15 years at least, you know, in there. And then with regards to replacing the fish, I mean, part of our genetics management plan is to bring fresh brood stock in. So because these fish move around so much, the genetics is that they're not, you know, distinct from, say, caught off Catalina versus caught off San Diego versus caught off Santa Barbara. So it allows us to collect fish where we can easily get them. And so the plan has been to fish mostly in recent years off of Catalina Island. And so we have a holding pen over there so we can catch fish, build up a number of fish, and then bring them over here back to the mainland. So Catalina has really been our working model for a number of years. And again, the fish, because of their genetics, you know, it's we don't need to travel around searching for fish when we know that we have good success over there. So that's our plan for catching broodstock.
When you get a new fish in for the broodstock system, do they immediately start to produce when you provide them the right conditions, or does it take them a while to acclimate before they will spawn, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so it's, you know, we don't just bring them back and stick them right in with our broodstock. I mean, our broodstock are healthy fish, and so we're not sure, you know, just like in the Nemo, hey, you brought the fish, he's from the ocean, you didn't want to sterilize them, all right? So our fish go through a process of about 45 days of quarantine at least, mm-hmm. and then they'll get into our broodstock tanks, so it's usually at least 2 or 3 months before they get into those tanks, and so we don't really know, we're not monitoring the genetics of every spawn to know exactly which females or males contributed to a spawn event. I mean, we know, we can tell if it's depending on the number of eggs we get out of a spawn event, you know, one female will put out over 1.5 million eggs in a spawn event. So we volumetrically, we measure all the spawns, and we know, hey, if we get 3 million plus eggs, that's two females. And so that sets up our genetics management plan for releases. So for every female that contributes to a spawn, we were able to release up to about 15,000 fish. So she's putting out millions of eggs, but we're only trying to get 15,000 fish out the door. So right now, for example, in our production that we're currently working through, we have, four FEs or four females that have contributed to the spawn. So that means we can get out 60,000 fish, and that's what we're working towards to get to these draw-out sites later this year and release in next year.
This is so cool. I love this, man. Yeah, this is great, Mike. That's really, really cool. Well, I don't want to take away from that because we're in such like a good mode of talking about it, but pardon me, what about other fish? You know, I mean, I know that there's been plenty of, I know there was talk about halibut and things like that. I mean, is it right now, is it strictly sea bass? Are you guys doing other things as well?
So, yes, under the ORHAP, it's just white sea bass. We have had for the recent years separate funding to investigate from private recreational fishermen to investigate other species, and halibut is one that we've selected and have been working on. Halibut originally 30 years ago was an ORHAP species, one that we were culturing, and we had done some releases back of fish, you know, 97, 98 time frame, and so that's now being considered again for potentially an ORHAP species, but this separate funding where we have collected broodstock, working with CCA to collect broodstock, and what's different about halibut is that we know and suspect that there's probably some subpopulation structure unlike white sea bass. So, for example, halibut off of San Diego are a little different from halibut off of Catalina, different off of Santa Barbara. So we've collected broodstock for halibut, collect broodstock from the areas that we plan to release them. So we have a broodstock spawning in captivity for us here. We're working on the culture methods, continue to learn about halibut.
I'm sure.
It's not a cookbook, even with our sea bass. I mean, I just can't hand you a cookbook and say, hey, go grow a halibut, go grow sea bass. So we're continuing to learn to culture them. We last year and in fall, working again with CCA, we released thousands of halibut, small juvenile halibut, into Mission Bay, and looking for those. We actually got some tag recoveries. We had the ability to trawl and try to recover those fish. We do have plans to release more next week, so working
great
with CCA and others, and I can't really provide that information on where and when they're going. Otherwise,
yeah, we need the exact time. I need the time and what color I should be fishing.
So that, you know, that's exciting news, and we'll continue to work on halibut separately. What I didn't mention earlier on is when we had this science review that took 3 years, I mean, there were three alternatives to that science review. They came out with 112 recommendations, but part of that plan of that review was to give the department some guidelines or recommendations. And so they basically had three options at the end of all that: A, discontinue the program; B, continue it with just white sea bass; or C, continue it with sea bass and add another species. So the ORHAP panel, after that came out, voted unanimously to do white sea bass and another species.
That's awesome.
And so they gave those recommendations to the department, and that was, you know, again, people, the commercial fishermen, the recreational fishermen, you know, it was unanimous. And so that's how the program hopefully is headed. I mean, again, with the new approved legislation and science advisory committee, we'll see. But eventually, I think we are trying to get the halibut back in under the umbrella of the ORHAP, which means we'll set up genetics management plans, and all these sorts of plans will come into play so we can continually, hopefully, release halibut like we are with the sea bass in the future.
I love it.
Such a cool thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're two of the favorite coastal fish, really. I mean,
yeah.
Sea bass and halibut. And the halibut fish in the last, this last spring was insane. I mean, what do you, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, we were exiting El Nino kind of, I guess, and during those El Nino years, kind of slim. But, man, the halibut fishing locally was incredible limits, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what's called a stock assessment, so that's taking, stock assessment scientists take data from various resources, for example, the commercial landings or the recreational landings, and they try to model that. And so I forget how many years ago, it's been some time now, 8 years or so ago, they came out with a halibut stock assessment that looked at the stocks of the wild species. And they broke it into Northern California, so Point Conception North, and then Southern California. And what they showed back then was that the Southern California populations have been exploited or dwindled down to probably less than 15% of the pristine stocks. So that means they've decreased by over 85%. Now they've been working on reevaluating and revising that stock assessment the few years, and supposedly next week I think they're coming out with an announcement, are going to be talking about the new revised plan, but it still shows that Southern California stocks of California halibut are
way
depleted.
Below. Yeah,
probably still in that neighborhood of 15 to 20% of what the pristine levels were. So it does require some attention. And, you know, the program that we do here with white sea bass, I mean, that's just one of the tools that fisheries managers, basically the Department of Fish and Wildlife, can use to help manage the fisheries. So, you know, what they decide to do with halibut, you know, there are various options. You know, obviously, the worst case scenario, close the fishery down, change size limits, change bag limits. There's all seasons. There's a lot of tools that they can use, and who knows what they'll do with halibut.
You were talking about the sea bass program, which has been going on for 30 years now, and I mean, there's nobody better making sea bass than you guys, except maybe a sea bass, and you're on track for putting out 60,000 in a year. Do you ever see the halibut program like reaching that kind of level? What do you think an ambitious goal is on how many halibut you guys would be able to kick out the door?
Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit, and a lot of that, what plays into that is you know, the sizes that release, you know, working out some of these culture techniques. So, you know, working with, you know, how much can the population, how much can be supported by the systems that they're being released into. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all considerations, and this is part of why bringing this back under the ORHAP purview and the Science Advisory Committee to help give some guidelines or recommendations and review the process. The sky could be the limit on those, but there's been a lot of research already done on these fish. They're enhancement work being done in Japan, et cetera, on their flounders, which are very similar to the halibut. So they've shown successes knowing the sizes and the seasons. So we've tried to incorporate that. We've been working on our own models to understand, you know, the successes that we could have with this program.
And I can only imagine the challenges, right? A sea bass, they want to school up, and, you know, top to bottom vertically, you can have, you know, whatever, 20, 30 fish in a column, right?
Sure.
But halibut, they all want to lay on the bottom, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the challenges.
Totally.
Yeah, so it's different. Yeah, I mean, if we were to go back 30 years and maybe learn and understand what we know now, I mean, to try to do an enhancement program where you've got a fish that freaking can run miles all up the coast versus a halibut, you know, or, you know, obviously salmon that returns to the same stream. So sea bass definitely presents some challenges to assess. Halibut, yes, we know they lie on the bottom. They don't travel as far, and that's probably part of the reason why we see the genetics possibly different in these different areas.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's
sure.
Cool,
yeah, because they're not traveling as far as the sea bass is up and down the coast.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, the information's incredible. And in fact, if you want to join us, 833. We do have one line open, 833-288-0973. We're giving away a full-day trip on the San Diego out of Seaforth, and you could do the texting option, too. Go to the app and hit the texting option, and we're going to be right back on Let's Talk Hookup. We're going to be taking more of your calls. It's Southern California's Sport Fishing Voice. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and radio network.
For your next trip, who needs travel insurance? You do. This is Bob Dawson from Dawson & Associates Insurance Services. We guarantee the lowest prices on all travel insurance plans with six companies and 122 different policies. These plans will include trip cancellation insurance, medical, medevac, baggage loss, and rental car coverage. Please call me at area code 619-990-3068 or visit us at safariglobaltravel.com.
It's a fact of life in Southern California, hard water. And if you have a pool, your tile shows it. Here comes San Diego Pool Tile Cleaning to the rescue. With their specialized equipment, SD Pool Tile Cleaning can safely remove the stubborn calcium deposits most pool owners struggle with. SD Pool Tile Cleaning can make your tile look bright and clean, almost like new again. High-pressure pool maintenance cleaning can damage grout, stone, and dislodge tiles. San Diego Pool Tile Cleaning uses a low-pressure media blasting technique to protect your pool surface from damage and yield fantastic results. So stop making excuses for your stained tiles on your pool. Make them look like new again with San Diego Pool Tile Cleaning. Check their website at sdpooltilecleaning.com and let their professional staff rejuvenate your pool tile. When it comes to professional swimming pool tile cleaning service, there's only one name you can trust. San Diego Pool Tile Cleaning. Check sdpooltilecleaning.com.
If you're into saltwater fishing, listen to this. Saturday, November 7th, it's Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. Hi, this is Doug Kern. We are pulling out all the stops on this one with discounts from 20 to 60% off on hundreds of items. Over 20 manufacturers' reps like Shimano and PowerPro. Plenty of seminars by saltwater experts, a giant raffle, and most of all, incredible deals on tackle. Check out all the Shimano and PowerPro product we have and talk to the Shimano and PowerPro guys about the best Shimano rod and reel for your trip. Backed by popular demand, the Shimano Tranks Casting Contest. Cast the Shimano Tranks 500 and the Terramar 90H rod and show your surface iron casting skills. The winner gets a Tranks 500 worth $500. It's our biggest sale of the year with hundreds of items discounted up to 60%. Plus, plenty of manufacturers' incentives from Shimano and PowerPro to spice up the pot. There will also be a huge raffle and lots of fun for everyone. So don't miss it. Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing. Unbelievable pricing on tackle clothing and accessories. Saturday, November 7th. Check saltwatertackle.com.
Many years ago, Baja pioneer Bob Van Wormer found the area he called the Great Fish Trap in the East Cape of Southern Baja and built what is now regarded as the premier East Cape resorts of Palmas de Cortez and Playa del Sol. Today, following in their father's footsteps, Bob's sons, Bobby, Chucky, and Eddie, have taken Palmas de Cortez and Playa del Sol to new levels. With the largest sport fishing fleet in Mexico, a luxurious spa, and top-of-the-line resort amenities, Van Wormer resorts have become a destination for travelers worldwide. But for us, Palmas de Cortez and Playa del Sol are just a short two-hour flight away. No other tropical fishing destination offers the experience and value that you'll find at Palmas de Cortez and Playa del Sol. Now you can plan your Baja fishing vacation quick and easy by visiting VanWormerResorts.com. And when you're ready to book, it's quick and easy. Or simply call 877-777-TUNA for more information. Van Wormer Resorts, the East Cape's finest.
A top fleet and superb fishing is what Seaforth Sport Fishing in Mission Bay is all about. With free parking and fully stocked tackle shop, it's no wonder Seaforth Sport Fishing is a favorite among anglers. Come aboard top boats like the Aztec, Cortez, Endeavor, Apollo, Outer Limits, El Gato Dos, Pride, Tribute, Pacifica, Pacific Voyager, and the Voyager. Plus the new Seaforth, Sea-Watch, and San Diego offer the finest half and full day trips available. Seaforth Sport Fishing. For charters or regular open party schedule, check Seaforthlanding.com. Run by fishermen, for fishermen, in Mission Bay.
We all need to get around, but we all need something different from our vehicles. Your San Diego County Ford dealers have you covered if you're looking for a new truck this month. Plus, it's SUV season, so they have great deals for everyone. Whether it's a new EcoSport that is nimble and fun around town, or the Ford Explorer that is capable of putting a boat in the water and has seating for seven, Ford has you covered. Ford trucks and SUVs aren't just powerful and legendary. They have the latest technology that helps you seamlessly connect your smartphone and ensure you're safe on the road. Features like Pro Trailer Backup Assist on trucks are truly a game changer at the ramp, helping you back up a trailer by simply turning a knob on the dash and doing the hard work for you. So check out all the great deals during SUV season and save some money on the right gear for you. Learn more at buyfordnow.com or visit your San Diego County Ford dealers today. They'll be glad to hook you up.